Hello there, listeners and viewers. This is Ron Stefanski, host of Disrupt Ed, with another episode to inspire and energize you. We have an epic brainiac cool dude on the show today, Sean Michael Brehm. But remember what Disrupt Ed is all about. It's about bringing together people who are the disruptors out there, who can explain this gobsmacking new technology that's advancing in all ways and all forms across all industries. And we're talking about a ginormously disrupted world. What do I mean by that? A 5G wired, workforce augmented, AI accelerated, quantum explosive, pandemic interrupted, globally interdependent, technology interconnected world of work and learning. How do you fit into that? There's so much going on. We really need to rely on what I describe as the real do-gooders out there, the people who are making this stuff happen and helping the rest of us to understand what the challenges are, what the opportunities are in this highly disruptive world. And I got such inspiration, energy from my last episode with Sean Michael Brehm that I had to ask him back. And that's a tricky proposition, given that he lives in Europe and we're transversing time zones and his residency in Estonia for the time being. But you're going to really love listening to him talk about quantum computing, because in many respects, he set the bar pretty high in our last episode by suggesting that quantum computing is going to dwarf AI in the coming years. And so we want to really reveal more of what he meant by that. So, Sean, welcome to the show. It is so great to have you back.
Great to be back. Thanks so much. Really appreciate it, Ron.
You know, you had me tripping the last time. You know, I have, you know, I'm this guy who sits there and is not someone with a tech background. And I get to meet these folks, these interesting folks that are building and creating, I mean, amazing things. And my head is always blown. And, you know, what I really look for is people who also have not only the brains and the means to do something powerful, but they also have what I describe as a high GSD index. And you have that in abundance. And what I mean by that is you have done it all in many respects. And so let's, for our listeners and viewers just joining on episode two, hear a little bit about your origin story, how you ended up in Estonia. And then we're going to talk about your work with quantum computing and where it's going to take us in the next couple of years and where you see some of the biggest opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, I just tell everybody, my friends will tell you who've known me for years, you know, I'm an accidental technologist. You know, when people say to me, Sean, I can't get this, I say, wait a minute, time out. You got to understand, I started my career as an airborne ranger infantry officer with more Copenhagen under my lower lip that should probably be legally allowed. And so if I can figure this out, everybody can figure this out. And that's really been my charter is, you know, I try to make things infantry simple. But the thing about making it infantry simple, sometime, you know, you have to educate. I love educating. When I was a young lieutenant, I had a colonel look at me and said, Sean, you speak to these guys, you know, a little too, with a too much of an erudite tone. And the next time I had one of my corporal, if you're out there still, Summer Corporal Cameron, used the word commensurate in a sentence doing an after action review. People looked at me and said, you know, that's really cool that you can do that. So I love teaching the troops. I love teaching the everyday person. And that's what I love about our intersection. So that being said, I got out of the military. I went to go work in some environments that were pretty unique and pretty interesting. Ended up graduating out of that environment and got into working with IBM. Had a blast. Did some really cool things on the early stages of big data analytics that laid the groundwork for AI. Was able to build an AI company that I sold. Then built another AI company that I exited. And then, you know, my wife has really been the progenitor of this vision. Is we were sitting at the table one day and she's like, how do you put that big brain of yours to get, you know, I was reading this article, Sean, from MasterCard that talked about the gig economy and where the economy is going. You know, I was like, well, that's a little bit too much Uber-esque to me because, you know, you want high paying jobs and you want to be able to give people you know, the ability to make money. And she said to me, well, what's the most high paying job? I said, well, the most valuable asset on the planet. I mean, it's $11 trillion worth of cybercrime is data. And she said, well, why don't you come up with a business model that figures out how to get people paid for their data? And from that one moment, you know, we had to figure out, okay, first of all, I have to make AI, you know, look a little bit better than artificial data, look a little bit better since something artificial, it has to be authentic. So then bumped into a guy named Dr. Wolf Kahn from MIT that talked about collective intelligence. And then, you know, had a chance to have some people approach me about blockchain. And I was like, I passed on it, but I said, there's some really good concepts in there. And then we started working on green wave technology, which was how do we build quantum chips? And Dr. Kahn and I have been working on that for a number of years. And then we're like, well, we need a database to support the quantum era because the current databases don't work. And then, well, that's going to take forever. Well, we also don't have enough energy to power quantum. So why don't we look at sustainable data centers? And the next thing you know, it just all merged together, which is Spectral Capital taking all of those concepts and taking companies in that space, merging them together to kind of create what I would call an infantry simple crawl, walk, run to quantum computing.
That's a great way to describe it. When we last spoke, I was thinking with Spectral Capital about the financial world and using quantum computing there, where it's going to be explosive. But what you're really suggesting is even more powerful than that. It's using quantum computing in a variety of different ways and in a variety of very bold and different use cases. So I think that's where our listeners and viewers would really appreciate hearing about what's to come. You know, some of those use cases that are truly going to impact the world and how we operate within it.
Sure. The first thing that, you know, because when I speak a lot and I, you know, meet people, you know, the funnest thing is, you know, you're here in Estonia. I'm bouncing back and forth between the United Kingdom, Estonia, and Switzerland right now, where our scientists are. So spending happen to be right now in Estonia looking at, you know, a new technology that I'm still blown away by. But, you know, when I talk to people about what I do, you quickly realize that they don't understand that how the internet actually works. Right. And then one of the first questions I ask people is, I'm like, do you know the difference between data and information? And about 99 out of 100 will not be able to describe the difference. And why is that important around our vision? The reason why it's important is data has utility of worth. And now all of a sudden, when I start using utility worth, as you know, now I'm talking financial concepts, right? We're talking about monetary policy. Yeah, we're talking finance. So, well, what do you mean, Sean? Well, let's use some financial numbers. What is the size of the global cybercrime market today? About $11 trillion. Cyber Ventures, you know, basically put that out. So it's about $11 trillion. So that means data must be so important that we lose $11 trillion. And this is after a multi-trillion dollar cybersecurity industry has been stood up. So what does that tell you? It's both an opportunity and an indictment, right? So if data is the new oil, then information is refined oil. And so if you're in West Texas and you refine, you know, your Texas crude, you turn it into some kind of fuel. It could be aircraft fuel, it could be diesel, it could be, well, the same thing is with information. When you refine information and the ingredients that you refine into it are, it has to have spatial context. You know, where did it happen? You know, temporal, when did it happen? Like in the future, is it going to happen in the future? Has it happened in the past? Is it happening now? You know, thematic, what are the themes? And then semantically, how does it make sense to run? And that's what quantum computing is going to do. It's going to accelerate that ability of moving data to information and then put it on a new kind of cloud where you're not going to use search engines anymore. It's going to talk to you. That's where we're at. And it's working. I showed it to you, you know, last time we were on. So we're there. Okay. So what are the business models around that? Well, first thing you want to be able to do is you want to leverage concepts like fintech. And so now all of a sudden you've got this concept called utility of worth. So you know, in quantum computing, you can literally create a utility of worth workflow for data as it becomes a quantum digital asset. That means all of us now have quantum digital assets. Okay, now you sprinkle in the security aspect and you sprinkle in the concept of post-quantum security, like post-quantum cryptography. Now all of a sudden I've been able to put my data in a vault so that when I release it, there's governance and there's lineage and there's provenance. It knows it comes from me. And then when it's used, I get paid for it. Right now, half the hedge funds are taking your data off your mobile phone and are trading the open markets based on how long you spent out in front of a Best Buy, right? You know, so when you start securing your data and my data in a way that only you can release it or only you can own the provenance and lineage of it, guess what happens? You're already known in the commercial markets as, you know, the most important thing is an ideal customer profile. That's why there's $11 trillion in cybercrime, because people are stealing data to refine it so it has value to a company to buy in a whitewashed way so they can sell you more product. So at the end of the day, we're the progenitor of all capital markets. And that's what quantum computing is going to do. It's going to give you what I want everybody to walk away with, Ron, is it's the great equalizer. It's the great opportunity to go back to like the original Buttonwood of 1792, where the utility is you.
Right. Well, I want to unpack this regarding cybersecurity, because in my explorations of it over the last 2 years, working with a DC firm that built a platform with the U.S. intelligence services, what I've learned is that it's become a very sophisticated industry. There's a dark web with job descriptions for people who can be hackers. There's all kinds of things. Now you have a hierarchy of different roles. You have this latest one where people are going in and finding people's email addresses and then bundling them from an entity. It could be a school district. It could be a bank or a hospital. And then they're selling those. And then those folks use them to infiltrate a system. You look at the latest one, the latest cyber attack that the Chinese put on all of our infrastructure. You know, these are profoundly deleterious efforts. So I guess, you know, when the more I dig into cybersecurity, the more freaked out I get. You know, they can really shut us down in a lot of important ways, you know, and really be disruptive on a scale we've never really even understood. And so what protections does does the advancement of quantum computing and the work you're doing assist us in creating, you know, a shield, basically, you know, a defense capability that, you know, really takes the wind out of cyber crimes, because you're able to deflect, you're able to shut them down, you're able to disable them, whatever you need to do to simply get away from ransom, you know, a high level of ransom to get your operation back on track.
You know, that's a very similar question. What I just recently did a show on NASDAQ Trade Talks. And this precise thing came up. And so the first thing I'm going to answer is, if you're a business owner, small, medium, large, or enterprise, or even a military supporter in the military domain or the intelligence command, start looking at NIST standards for post-quantum cryptography. They're out there. It's deployable today. So you have to understand that, you know, speaking as a guy on cybersecurity, and I could spend an entire conversation telling you why I think cybersecurity is broken. One of it is, it's the fifth domain of warfare, but 99% of the people involved in cybersecurity have never fought in the first three domains of war. So they really don't understand the Clausewitz and model, and they really don't deploy cybersecurity in a proper defense in depth. They don't implement concepts that are proven from Clausewitz to Leonidas. So that's a whole other discussion, right, that we can talk about. But what quantum computing done is, just if you ever looked at a redacted document, we talked about this last time. Like, if you look at a redacted document, it's blacked out. So think about it. If you were to follow the NSA or the CIA's example of releasing data, where the stuff you didn't want to, that had the most value, was redacted, why don't you deploy that right now? Right now. That would enable you to basically publish your data openly and just redact everything that you don't want people to read. And now all of a sudden, whether you store it in a relational database or you store it in MongoDB or you store it, you know, in an Excel file, it doesn't make a difference anymore. What are you going to steal? Like, so if all of a sudden, if you use post-quantum cryptography, something like Sphinx Plus, and you encrypt all the email addresses, wait a minute, pretty much thwarted that attack avenue, haven't you? Right. And then, you know, you cold storage your the ability of your keys to remove them, and you know, only someone with the kind of like the guys carrying the football for, you know, nuclear codes, there's only a few guys that have them. you've solved about 85% of your problems right away. Then you start encrypting, you know, down the line, you create a priority of mechanisms of what you should be encrypted. So right now you can solve the cybersecurity problem, one, but that's me putting my, you know, airborne ranger infantry I had on is fighting it like a real war. But again, that's a whole different show. But what you could start doing right now, and I said it on Trade Talks, is start going to NIST, N-I-S-T, and start looking at your IT guys. Go, guys, we're going to create a priority of all the things that we need to encrypt. Whether, hey, how about an idea? Why don't we encrypt the passwords to your firewall? How about we encrypt your firewall logs? How about we encrypt your PCAP data? Like, how about we encrypt emails? And how about we encrypt passwords and come up with a protocol?
Ron, to say you're bolted. I mean, you're like Fort Knox at that point, basically, is what you're saying. You're saying that you're really, you know, now it's interesting.
Look, it's not a panacea, quickly, but it's a good first start.
Right. But it's now the next question is how quickly can that strategy be deployed? Because on the one hand, you've got businesses, like you said, that don't even understand what quantum is, the difference between data and information. But at the same time, you have the captains of industry who are being ransomed, who are being held hostage, and they're having to throw a lot of money in some cases to restore their data, to restore their operation. So that's an incentive of a massive scale to do this quickly. So when you look at your crystal ball, Sean, I have confidence in your answer, whatever that answer is. But when do you think we'll reach a point where we have enough encryption through NIST and all of that, that we can rely comfortably on not being hacked and not having our operation, you know, distended?
In my humble opinion, you have a clear roadmap to start today. And I mean, but you know, history repeats itself. Look how long it took people just to become SOC 2 certified, right? And oh, by the way, I'm not a big advocate of SOC 2 and its ability to make you not to keep you from being hacked, but I do advocate it in the sense at least it starts thinking, getting you thinking down the avenues to reduce the likelihood of it. Well, you know, the capability is here today. It's the culpability of the leadership, whether they want to spend time in doing it. And at the end of the day, if I'm having sold cybersecurity myself and you get down to the, you know, to the CEO or the senior leadership, most of them still don't understand cybersecurity threats. Unfortunately, the industry has done a horrible job of just blaming the user. Like, wow, I'm a cyber warrior. My job is to defend, but I'm going to defend the people. I'm going to blame the people I'm supposed to defend. Where's the warrior ethos in that, right? None whatsoever.
No, you're absolutely right.
So just start today with post-quantum cryptography. Take the time, do a situational analysis, look at your what's most important to you. You know, some people call it what's your gold. I think it's your, you know, the deterministically, you know, if we lose this, we lose the company data. And you determine within that data, where do we start? And literally set yourself on an API in Amazon, and start passing the data to it, start generating your keys and start encrypting it. There you go. And then think about it. If you just did this, every company out there has to do what's called N plus one. They have to do an N plus one back of their database. Great. Take that database and encrypt it. Right. Because now what we're seeing is people are buying are basically able to steal the N plus one redundancies, but come up with a priority on what components of data. And this is a hard part because, again, if you don't know the difference between data information, most people don't realize they could have data set A, data set B, and data set C that by themselves are useless. But when I combine them, it's information. Right. So you have to figure out of those, when that combination happens, what's, as Clausewitz would say, what is das Schwerpunkt? Where's the point where it all comes together? That's where you start to encrypt. So there you go. I think that's very simple advice.
I love that. So listeners and viewers, you have been listening to Sean Michael Brehm, and I'm going to tell you something. We're going to have him back again and again. His explanations for the things that many of us, and I put myself at the head of that line, don't understand, Sean, you have such an amazing way of helping the rest of us to understand some things that are pretty complex, but where there are simple and direct solutions to some of the challenges that this disrupted world and environment have created. So I always come away energized by our conversation, Sean, and also a little bit more hopeful about the world in which we live. So I'd like to wish you a great holiday, Sean. I'd like to wish our disrupted viewers and listeners out there a great holiday. Listen, get disrupted with us and share your feedback, share your comments for Sean. Sean is exploding online right now. You can see him everywhere. He's becoming almost ubiquitous. So find him, find me, and get disrupted together. Thank you so much, Sean, and we'll be having you back shortly. Until then, this is Disrupt Ed. Thank you.